All right.
Yeah, you can enter.
Test, test, 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so you want to know what we are cooking. So...
Wait, saves the day is on.
Everybody knows that one.
An anthem song.
Okay. All right. Okay, so you want to know what we're eating. So this is important.
It's the night before Christmas 2017, and my family has everything we need. We've got the Muppet Christmas Carol. We've got cats.
Hey, Carol. My chirp-chirp.
Oh. Cute.
Not bad. So, you were, like, cooking all day, and I was just,
not.
Like...
I started at, like, 4:30, so...
And we have lots of vegetarian food.
And so we've got the Thai soup, which does have chicken in it.
So for, are you going to eat that? What are you going to eat?
I will eat that. I will not eat the chicken. I'll just kind of make sure that I kind of strain it out. I've got rice, like regular rice for you guys, but I've got cauliflower, like riced cauliflower for me.
What's in this Pyrex?
It is sriracha pineapple.
For a lot of people here in the Midwest, Christmas means ham, roast beef, and a cheese roll. None of those things are at the Fenton family Christmas, though. Because if my twin sister Claire ate any of those foods, she would get really sick. Claire has a super rare disorder. She can hardly eat any protein. And to survive, she and people with similar diseases need to drink a specially made formula multiple times a day for the rest of their life.
You just kind of put a little water in and you shake it and you just chug it.
These foods are medically necessary for people with these kinds of disorders. No less agency than the FDA defines them as nutrients these patients can't get anywhere else. Yet many people's insurance plans don't cover medical foods, and that makes getting their basic nutrition a constant expensive headache.
From the Public Health Reporting Collaborative, Side Effects Public Media, this is The Workaround.
Stories of the creative and sometimes shocking things people do to get around America's healthcare system and get the help they need.
I'm Christine Herman.
And I'm Sarah Fenton.
So, Sarah, I'm guessing your workaround has something to do with your sister's disease?
Yes. My workaround is about a very tiny sliver of the world, people like my sister Claire with disorders called inborn errors of metabolism.
And metabolism, that's how your body breaks down food, right?
Right. And this disorder is exactly what it sounds like. It means a person's metabolism doesn't work exactly right. So people with this condition need to replace the foods they need but can't eat with special foods called medical foods.
So what exactly is this disease? What's it called?
Okay, so it has a big, long name, phenylketonuria. Because of that, everyone just calls it PKU for short. And it's really rare. There are only about 16,000 people with PKU in the entire country.
Phenylketonuria, that sounds familiar though.
Yes, because a lot of people read that word every day whether they notice or not. For people like me who are obsessed with Diet Coke, the word is right on the can in a warning. Phenylketonurics contains phenylalanine.
Phenylalanine. Rewind back to biochemistry class. That's an amino acid.
Yes. And the fact that you know that puts you very far ahead of most people when it comes to understanding this disease. These Coke cans have a warning on them because diet sodas have a bunch of that amino acid, phenylalanine. It's in some artificial sweeteners that make soda taste good. People with PKU can't have that amino acid at all. And it's more than just an allergy. Their bodies literally cannot process it. If they eat it, it builds up in their bodies, and it can make people sick. In kids, it can cause serious permanent brain damage and disabilities. In adults, it can cause emotional, mental, and behavioral problems. And that's bad because most food has phenylalanine in it. It's a building block of all protein. And that's where medical food comes in. Medical foods can come in lots of different forms, but the most common one is like a powder that you mix with water in a shaky bottle, like a weightlifter. It's basically protein made by lab scientists who extract that one amino acid that PKU people can't process. The good news is, if managed from birth, and if people have access to medical foods, people can live normal, healthy lives.
I feel like there's a big but coming up.
Nope. Everyone got the healthcare they needed and they lived happily ever after. That's the end of our podcast, everyone. No, this is the workaround and there's always a problem, right? The problem is insurers aren't in the business of covering food. Like, I can't whip out my United Health card when I want to get a frozen pizza at Aldi's. And that's the problem with these medical foods. Some insurers see this as oral nutrition and some providers treat it as something more medicine-y. And if you're on the wrong side of that decision, you're not going to have a good time.
So people need these medical foods to survive, but insurance companies don't really recognize food as medicine. So I'm guessing this is where the workaround comes in?
Yes. So with this disease, they have to resort to all kinds of crazy workarounds to get what they need. Some drive hours to swap food in parking lots, or they forego big life events in order to afford supplies. Some get trapped in certain states because they provide great coverage. I talked to a lot of those people this year, and whatever their workaround is, they've all had to pay a price just to afford what's medically necessary for them. One of those people is Amanda Moeller.
So it felt like a threat to my well-being and livelihood, like to have this issue with coverage, with them just denying that this was important.
Amanda and my twin sister Claire have the same metabolic dietitian at St. Louis Children's Hospital. They met at a PKU bowling party. Claire had some leftover formula and gave it to Amanda, whose insurance doesn't cover her medical food. And this is a really common thing to do for people who aren't covered. People swap or they give away extra formula.
Oh, your kitchen's so beautiful.
Amanda showed me her formula cabinet. It has boxes about the size of a cake box that contain 4 cans of formula each.
And I'll probably go through, if I was doing this for my full daily amount, I'd probably go through one of these cans every other day.
We did the math, and one can of the kind of formula Amanda buys off the shelf costs close to $50. She takes a little scoop and puts it in a bottle with a little water and shakes it up.
It's like a cocktail shake. That's what my sister uses.
It doesn't taste that good, though.
And then she pours it into a little juice glass and shoots it down really quickly.
What does it taste like?
You are welcome to try it.
Really?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to try it.
I can get you a glass of water to chase it also.
Oh. It's not terrible. It sort of tastes like pudding with this very weird aftertaste, kind of.
Amanda has to do this multiple times a day. A lot of people with PKU just carry a bottle around with the stuff in it. And Amanda says that sometimes when she's shaking up her formula, she thinks about how much this little amount of powder costs. She treats it like an expensive piece of jewelry when she goes on a trip. That's how valuable it is.
At this point, I have been so nervous about, like, since this is so valuable to me, I will carry it all in a backpack on my person, even if I'm going somewhere for a week, because I do not want it to get lost in transit in my suitcase. So it'll be like weighing 50 tons, but I will take it through that way just because I don't want to think about what it would be like without it.
Amanda went off her parents' plan when she turned 26 and onto her employer's plan. She's a social worker. All of a sudden, her formula stopped being covered and she was on the hook for this medical necessity that cost about $800 a month.
I did not anticipate that I would not have coverage at all, that I would go through rounds of appeals and get to the point where I just didn't get any results. That was not what I expected.
But that's exactly what happened. So she started to appeal the decision with the advocacy organization, the National PKU Alliance. This became practically a second job. She was on the phone over her lunch hour, during breaks, trying to get her provider to cover this, but it didn't work.
They still said, even if this was my sole source of nutrition, they would not consider that medically necessary.
It got so desperate at one point that her husband, who's a biologist, thought about buying individual amino acids and making the formula himself for Amanda, which is really romantic, actually. But they decided against doing that.
My dietitians were not recommending it. They understood why that would be a consideration. But, I mean, it is kind of taking medicine into our own hands a little more than we were comfortable with in the end.
But formula is essential for Amanda. She says she can't even remember people's names when she doesn't have it.
There was one time when my formula didn't come in time. There was a delay with the shipment, and that day was miserable because I felt like, I mean, it's essentially like if you hadn't eaten all day, like you're on a fast.
And being sharp is super important for her job. As a social worker, she's helping women in these really desperate situations, and she needs to be present for them.
It is not an option for me to not manage my diet, and one of the big components for that is the work I do. Like, I can't be at second best working with survivors. Like, that isn't giving them everything they deserve in the long term.
But Amanda's lucky in one way. She lives a few miles away from St. Louis Children's Hospital. After she stopped receiving formula, Children's Hospital dietitians stepped up to help her. She gets about a third of her formula through the hospital, but it's not a formal program. Medical food companies send samples to metabolic physicians who treat these patients with the hopes they'll distribute them and people will say, "Oh, yum, I like this new orange flavor and I am going to buy that." But those cans of formula all have an expiration date. So once the expiration date gets closer, the hospital calls up Amanda and says, "Hey, you should come pick up these samples."
"Welcome to St. Louis Children's Hospital. Force 4. Going up."
In her case, it's Bridget Tomich, her children's hospital dietitian.
So we have our PKU cabinet. PKU by far has the most formula options. So we're always trying to think of people, if we have formula that's, you know, close to expiring, we're giving that to Amanda or someone else who can't get it.
At the genetics division, they have a big cabinet next to the fax machine that's filled with these cans of formula from different companies.
So the phenylalanine on the second shelf, some of those are lower calorie options. And then on the bottom, these are kind of the newer, more expensive products that incorporate the glycomacropeptide, or GMP, that protein that tastes a little bit better, but is definitely a more expensive product.
And then this one looks like it's expiring 5/2018, which is in 3 months.
This was last winter. Podcasts take a long time, everyone.
So when will you start to reach out to people and say, "Hey, like, we've got some extra stuff. Do you need it?"
Yeah, probably a month or so before. My coworker and I are really good about watching this and making sure we can find someone. Occasionally we'll mail it, but we really would prefer someone to come in and pick it up because we don't want it to go bad.
Bridget is a champion for her patients with PKU. She spends a lot of time on the phone with insurers trying to explain to them the medical necessity of this formula.
We're spending at least 25% of our time working on insurance, which is unfortunate because I'd like to spend more time, you know, making our clinic better for our patients and really focusing on their diet and making it the best they can. But it's so important to get their formula that this is something we're really shifting to and making sure that they have.
And Bridget's a dietitian. She's not a billing specialist or an insurance executive. But like the patients, navigating this problem can take over someone's life. She says she doesn't have a choice. When people can't afford their formula, they can give up on their diet completely.
Yeah, I can think of an adult woman I worked with that came back to clinic, was very excited to try and get back on diet. She had found a formula she really liked, and we struggled with coverage. She was actually buying the formula online for, I think, $400 a can, which is crazy because the formula was about half of that per can.
Bridget says those patients a lot of times just disappear.
And unfortunately, I think she just got frustrated. I don't know if she's still doing formula or not, but I haven't been able to get a hold of her, which is really unfortunate.
And she says until things change and patients can get coverage, she'll continue distributing the samples and chasing down insurers.
But I'm guessing not everyone has a Bridget who can call them up and give them extra formula for free.
Right. I talked to a lot of different people on the phone who have had this same insurance struggle, and they scrape the bottom of the barrel for leftover formula, but they do it online.
they'll post it and say, I have so many cans of this kind of formula. This is where I am in the country. I will happily ship it to anyone if you'll pay for shipping.
That's Marisha Granbury. She's a mom whose six-year-old daughter, Sadie, has PKU. But their insurance in Texas stopped covering her formula. And if Sadie doesn't get her formula, she could deal with really bad permanent mental health issues. Her IQ could go down and her brain could actually be damaged. Marisha eventually started buying directly from the manufacturer, cans of formula that cost hundreds of dollars per month. And one day she was scrolling through her favorite PKU recipe page on Facebook.
A mom had just posted it, you know, within the, you know, past 5 or 10 minutes that, hey, I'm in Amarillo, Texas, and I have 19 cans of this kind of formula.
It was exactly the kind of formula Sadie needed, hundreds of dollars worth.
And, you know, I had to read it a couple of times because it seemed too good to be true. And, you know, less than a week later, I had a huge box of formula for Sadie. It was amazing.
Marisha says she was lucky. Not a lot of people are looking for the type of formula that Sadie uses. But with the more popular kinds of formula, these posts can end up resembling an eBay auction.
But I have seen other posts where someone will offer something and someone will respond and then someone else will respond. If that doesn't come through, can I be next? You know, I'll be third. Hey, if you still have it, call me. It's a hot commodity.
So how common is this Facebook swapping? Like, do people have supply chains of diverted formula?
So that does not happen. There isn't some mass redistribution scheme going on. People feel incredibly blessed when they have access and coverage for their medical food. They're worried that if companies or state programs thought they were taking advantage of the program,
it might go away.
Right. There are even more extreme workarounds to get PKU formula coverage, too. I sent a few emails back and forth with one woman who moved from Georgia to South Carolina because that state had better coverage options. People I've talked to said that's always something they consider when they think about moving. What's the coverage situation like? And sometimes it works in the opposite way. Claire, my sister, lives in Illinois, which will send formula to people with PKU at no charge for life. Claire loves the program. She describes it as one of the best things in her life. And she likes it so much that she's on a first-name basis with the state health department staffer who hooks her up.
So there's a metabolic disorder program, like metabolic formula program. And so I have a paper that I fill out and I fax to Doug Hart, who is my best friend in the world, because he's the one who dispenses all the formula. Basically, he like gets all the formula ready and transports it.
But because that kind of program is somewhat rare, she feels stuck.
So we're probably going to stay in Illinois forever if, as long as, you know, the formula program still exists.
Claire has thought a lot about going to grad school, but in the town where they live, there isn't a lot of options for her. So she thought about Mizzou across the river in Missouri. But in order to get her degree there, her husband would probably need to stay behind so she can keep getting her formula.
And it just didn't seem doable, you know. We kind of just cut it off because if I'm going back to school, I don't have time to fight the insurance companies. Like, I won't have time to think if I go to grad school. So I definitely don't have time to sit on the phone with insurance companies for hours. And I know that's what it takes because I have friends that I talk to online that have PKU, and they just tell me horror stories about being on the phone with their insurance companies for, you know, trying to fit it in during their lunch hour at work.
Is there a rule that says insurance companies need to cover this? I mean, this is something that people need.
There's no blanket nationwide rule when it comes to required medical foods coverage from insurance companies. And that's what America's health insurance plans said when I asked them about this. It's up to individual providers. States have different laws for insurance requirements for medical foods. In Missouri, for example, it needs to be covered for kids until the age of 6. Some states require it for all kids under 18, and some have assistance programs, and some don't have any requirements at all.
I guess I just still don't understand. I mean, if this is something people need to live, why aren't insurance companies covering it?
Insurers are the easy target for this problem, obviously. And maybe because of that perception, none of the big five insurers wanted to grant me a recorded interview about what their coverage guidelines are and their reasoning behind their policies. I tried for months. Some just ignored me, and others, like Aetna, sent me their guidance document on medical foods. It says,
Aetna does not cover nutritional support that is taken orally, i.e. by mouth, unless mandated by state law. Oral nutrition is not considered a medical item.
And here's the response I got from United Health through email.
Many of United Healthcare's plans cover medical foods for certain medical conditions that prevent eating, swallowing, digesting, or other issues, and we encourage anyone who has questions on their coverage to call the number on their ID card.
And here's Anthem.
Oral eternal nutrition, or oral feeding, is considered medically necessary when all of the following criteria are met. 1, the product must be a medical food for oral feeding, and 2, the product is the primary source of nutrition, that is, constitutes more than 50% of the intake for the individual. And 3, the product must be labeled and used for the dietary management of a specific medical disorder, disease, or condition for which there are distinctive nutritional requirements. Some benefit plans exclude products available without prescription, sometimes referred to as over-the-counter, even when prescribed by a physician or other healthcare provider.
All the responses do indicate how variable policies and laws are, though. Even within companies, sometimes the stuff is covered and sometimes it isn't. Still, I wasn't really getting to the bottom of things with the companies themselves, so I gave Dr. Jerry Vockley, the chief of medical genetics at Pittsburgh Children's Hospital, a phone call. He's an expert on these types of disorders and what some people call the reimbursement dilemma. He says medical foods coverage could be a Pandora's box for insurers.
How about if somebody comes out with a drug that helps somebody with autism? But now you have to evaluate the claim, and you have to evaluate what's necessary to qualify for that medical food, and now you have this much larger population of autism, irritable bowel, low fat. You've got hyperlipidemia. Are you gonna cover people's low fat foods?
I think insurers rationalize, we're not in the business of covering supplements. We're not in the business of covering, for example, gluten-free pasta. Why should we cover this, another form of oral nutrition? And from the insurer's side, that makes sense, because even though it's medically necessary, the Food and Drug Administration doesn't regulate formula as a prescription medicine.
The amount of fee-restricted formula that you need to keep your phenylalanine level low in your blood is, by any logical definition, a medicine. You are taking it to treat a disease. Now, notice I said logical definition, because right. I'm sure you're well aware that in the medical arena, healthcare policy, there's very little that's logical.
But if it's practically medicine, why isn't it actually medicine?
So it gets really wonky. Medical foods started out labeled as drugs, but in the 70s, makers flipped them over to this category of food so that manufacturers would be able to develop the item more quickly and inexpensively and make them easier for people to get.
So it's supposed to be easier. Why is it so tough to get medical foods now?
So it has to do, again, with insurance. Here's the issue. The FDA approval process is there for a reason. It proves that a drug works and that it's not going to hurt anyone. And insurers, in the name of keeping costs down and keeping people safe, don't want to cover a treatment that hasn't been proven through this stringent process. But now, kind of perversely, the very action that tried to make medical foods more accessible, this reclassification, makes it less accessible for some people because insurers don't want to cover a treatment that isn't technically considered a medicine. The Orphan Drug Act further defined medical foods, and the FDA has issued guidance documents to clarify what they are and what they aren't. But that still doesn't compel companies to cover them.
Really?
Yes. And even if formula was considered a drug, a lot of insurance plans still wouldn't have to cover it. While some plans need to cover essential health benefits, such as prescription drugs, most people are on employer-based plans or self-insured plans, which don't have to cover those benefits. And as Vockley says, if insurers aren't required to cover this expensive treatment for this very rare disease, they're not going to do it. there's no way they could ever make money out of it.
These insurers are not Darth Vader. I mean, I talk to them all of the time, and we have these passionate and compassionate discussions about, you know, what we should be doing, but that what we should be doing comes down to saying we need to be doing this as a society and not rely on the free market to pay for it, because the free market pressures are all to save money and not to save patients.
For most people with rare diseases, fighting with insurance companies goes with the territory. Tim Boyd is the director of state policy at the National Organization for Rare Disorders, or NORD. He told me FDA approval for treatments is a really easy shortcut for insurers to decide what should and shouldn't be covered. And that's a problem, not only for PKU, but for other rare diseases, because according to Boyd, 95% of rare diseases don't have an FDA-approved treatment.
So in general, when you're talking about treatment for these diseases, you're talking about kind of a realm of medical services that may not necessarily have a body of evidence for their underlying condition.
Like Vakli, he says he understands to an extent why insurance companies are wary.
Payers are generally trying to make sure that what they are paying for is warranted. There's an understandable feeling, I think, on their part of wanting to make sure that the care that they're paying for, they're not creating waste. They're not paying for things that are unnecessary. They're certainly not paying for things that could potentially make a patient's situation worse.
Patients with diseases that are widely studied and understood don't have to worry about this. The healthcare system is largely made for people with common problems. But people with rare diseases who could potentially be helped by other treatments are caught in the middle. If your potential treatment exists in this gray area, it's scientifically understood but not rigorously proven, it feels like you're repeatedly banging your head against the wall.
But rare diseases are never going to get the type of research and funding that Alzheimer's or cancer does.
Right.
So what's the option for these people? Could this formula ever go through that process and become a prescription drug?
Most everyone I talked to said you just can't put that genie back in the bottle. What people do recommend is changing policies to better cover the space where medical foods live. The kind of ground-level defense is increasing awareness and understanding of these inborn errors of metabolism among insurers, with the thought that if they understood the disorders and the necessary lifelong treatment, they would be more likely to cover what patients need. The second option is to create a state-level model that other states can look to as the golden standard for medical foods coverage. Right now, there's no consensus on who gets covered or for how long or if there needs to be a financial need before coverage kicks in. Some say a state model would smooth that all out. And the third and most popular option that the National PKU Alliance has been fighting for since 2009 is to create a federal mandate that would require insurers to cover medical foods. Jerry Vakli said a narrow definition of what kind of food should be covered is key.
A specifically defined set of foods designed to treat the type of disorders that I've defined as diseases where your food will kill you, that lead to the accumulation of a toxin that you can only get rid of by eating a special diet, that those special diets ought to be covered.
He says otherwise, as a society, we're falling flat on our faces. There's a law before Congress right now called the Medical Nutrition Equity Act. It would mandate all third-party insurers and state insurance programs to cover medical foods and low-protein foods for people with inborn errors of metabolism and digestive disorders.
But if they've been fighting this fight to mandate coverage for almost a decade now, what makes anyone think it will change?
Well, they did have one victory recently. Two years ago, Congress passed the 2017 National Defense Authorization Act. It was hundreds of pages long, but people with PKU were very excited about one tiny part. In that enormous new law, there was language lifted from the Medical Nutrition Equity Act, which required medical foods coverage for families using TRICARE, the insurance program for the military. And advocates saw this as a huge victory. They figured if they could get the military to get down with this, they could get others on board too. Both rare disease advocate Tim Boyd and Dr. Vockley say in order for rare diseases to get the attention from Washington they want, people need to band together. That's what helped get coverage for TRICARE. And it's what helped pass the Orphan Drug Act back in 1983. A coalition of patients and advocates for rare diseases pushed the law through Congress that incentivized drug companies to develop treatments for rare diseases. Here's Dr. Vockley.
If you add all of the diseases together that are treated by one of these medications, it actually ends up not being all that uncommon.
But in the meantime, Bridget will still be calling up Amanda to unload nearly expired formula. Uninsured people will pay close to $10,000 a year out of pocket, and people will write pleas on Facebook for someone to send them a can of formula to make it through the month. They just don't really have another choice. Thanks for listening to The Workaround.
The Workaround is brought to you by Side Effects Public Media.
We're a regional health reporting group based at NPR member station WFYI in Indianapolis,
KBIA in Columbia, Missouri, St. Louis Public Radio, WILL in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, WNIN in Evansville, Indiana, and WOSU in Columbus, Ohio all contribute to Side Effects. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, give us a rating, and tell a friend.
Thanks to Christine Herman for being my co-host, and make sure to listen to her episode of the podcast as well.
And thanks to Sarah for bringing us the story on this episode.
The show is edited by Sadie Babbitts and produced by Matt Hodapp.
Thanks to consultant Starlee Kine for her early thinking on this project.
And a special thanks to Carmel Roth. She's the former editor and founder of Side Effects Public Media, who created the idea of The Workaround. I'm Sarah Fentum.
And I'm Christine Herman. Thanks for listening.